Greg Farrell is the president and CEO of Farrell Wealth and is a registered representative with and securities offered through LPL Financial. Member FINRA, SIPC insurance products offered through LPL Financial or its licensed affiliates. The opinions of Greg and his guests are merely opinions. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, and financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing.
Well, good morning. The show's Money Matters with Greg, 103.1 WVLP FM here in Valparaiso, Indiana. And we are talking today about America and America's potential. We're going to talk money. That's what we do on this show. We talk a lot about anything to do with money, how we save you money, and somehow being able to give you some tips that might be able to get you to keep some shekels in your pocket and hopefully help you invest your money wisely and all those sorts of things. So I'm Greg Farrell, CEO and president of Farrell Wealth, and it's a wealth management company that is here, that's local in Valparaiso, and that also has a number of clients throughout the nation. And we work with high net worth individuals and many of their companies, business owners, men and women that drive this economy here in America, the small businesses that are out there that are driving the economy. And that's why I want to talk today about the economy and see how we could actually, why we're not really getting to our potential, why many Americans feel as though we're not achieving our potential currently, and then also maybe how we might be able to achieve our potential. So today is all about potential on the show. You can follow us on Twitter at Farrell Wealth. It's at F-A-R-R-A-L-L Wealth. I like to say it's pronounced like Will Farrell, but he spells his name miserably wrong. The correct way is F-A-R-R-A-L-L, and then W-E-A-L-T-H on Twitter. You can also find us at farrellwealth.com, www.farrellwealth.com, and reach out to us there. A number of different resources for you that are out there for financial literacy and education and a number of things to be able to sort of learn about. Go out there and grab it. We just recently updated our Facebook page as well. So Farrell Wealth is on Facebook page. We're going to add a Money Matters with Greg website. So things have some nice legs here with the show. Things are really starting to increase. We have a number of downloads off of iTunes. So you can find all of our shows on iTunes. Just search the subject. Under you search Money Matters with Greg on iTunes, and you'll find a number of different topics that you can listen to at your leisure. So basically, that's the cleanup, the house cleaning that you need to know about. The show is 219-476-9000 if you want to call and contact us here. Obviously, announcing or advertising the show as well, there's a really great offering as far as a packet that goes out to anyone that's interested in advertising here at WVLP. So I highly recommend you do that as well. It's great exposure for you, your business, and you can advertise on my show or any other show that might be out there. We're going to change up too. We're looking at trying to change up the format of the show, have it more of a talk conversation type things. We're discussing conversations about furniture and having sort of a more of a fireside chat type conversation with our guests. So that excited about that. As far as that's coming about down the line, we'll let you know how that goes. And you can see those, ultimately see those videos on YouTube. And we have a YouTube channel at Farrell Wealth as well. So you can search a lot of the videos out there. So that's enough said about all of that, but we are very excited about the show, and we've just been having a ball going on a little over 2 years now and get better and better every day. Along those lines, want to be able to talk about how we can make America better. Right now, are Americans optimistic and confident right now, or are they cautious? And we've been talking a lot about this on the show as far as many people are feeling as though that their better future, they're sort of losing hope in the better future that lies ahead. And based on some surveys that have been out there, you know, the results are not encouraging. And for example, a recent poll, 48% of young Americans said that they believe the American dream is dead. This comes from Harvard University Institute of Politics, and it's a survey of young American attitudes towards politics and political service. And it was just taken in 2015. So this is nothing dated 20 years ago. This is recent, and that is sad. I mean, a whopping 76% of those polled were not confident that life will be better for their children, and only 28% said they believed America is the best country in the world. That's sad, and that is something I want to address here on the show and talk about, because the show is about money. What is the solution to help the U.S. economy perform better and above its potential, or even near its potential, which it's right now it's performing without a doubt below? So those sorts of results really raise the question, why is the world's greatest economy, which is the richest economy, struggling to live up to its potential? And perhaps, you know, like I said, most importantly, how can we fix it? So the U.S. economy right now is below the potential, and many Americans have this negative outlook on the future state of the U.S. economy. You know, and that's been demonstrated, obviously, in the poll I just mentioned, but also by poll results in a number of different polls out there. It just doesn't feel like people are excited about America. And although we see more than seven full years in current economic expansion, many still feel the sense of disappointment in its progress. And in fact, although the economy has seen continued growth, the pace of that growth, as measured by gross domestic product, or GDP, which we talk about all the time in this show, has been sluggish at times, and really overall it's below any sort of trend. So, you know, historically, if you look back in history, which we always do, you have to consider a history before you can look towards the future. If you're looking at trends and looking at things to investments, you definitely want to be able to make sure that you're looking at a historical vantage point. Well, there's always been a correlation between the depth of a recession and the strength of a recovery that follows it. And you can really see that the deeper the recession that is typical has led to stronger rates of growth during the recovery. However, this has just not been the case in the current recovery. I mean, we've recovered from the 2008 recession. And the 2008 recession was the largest since the Great Depression, hence the name Great Recession. But the recovery rate has been the slowest since that time. And another way to quantify the current growth gap is known as potential GDP. And potential GDP is the rate at which an economy can grow at a constant rate of inflation. And when the economy exceeds that growth rate, excesses start to appear, which can lead to inflation and an eventual recession. Now, when an economy is growing below potential GDP, which has been the case the past several years, it indicates the economy is not living up to its potential. And the current gap stands right now at $365 billion. So to put this number in perspective, that is like removing an entire state of Minnesota from the U.S. economy. That is huge. And although the economies continue to grow, it's the pace of that growth that's been sluggish and has us concerned here, and has obviously many people out there in the world concerned, because I'm not making up these polls. These polls are coming from extremely bright individuals that know what they're doing and collecting data. So let's just talk about what is keeping us from our potential. So we can kind of agree that things have definitely are slower than what they should be, as slower than what they have been in the past. And there's really two things that are keeping us and the U.S. economy from reaching its overall potential. One is monetary policy. And the other is income versus debt dynamics. So let me talk about monetary policy first. Monetary policy, you know, the Federal Reserve, which everybody hears about on the radio, whether you follow it or not like we do, and all the geeks that I know that follow the Fed and basically, you know, our Super Bowls are when Yellen speaks, who's the head of the Fed, Janet Yellen. If you don't know that, certainly it's a name that is, in our world, a household name. But if it's not a household name in yours, I can completely understand. But what she says is very important. She is in charge of the Fed. And there are 12 governors that are part of the Fed. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that later in the show. But now we're talking potential and America's potential. But the Federal Reserve uses monetary policy to keep, to help smooth out economic cycles. And at a high level, just looking at this from up above, this works as follows. The economy enters a recession. The Fed decreases rates to spur growth. All right? Pretty simple. Or the economy recovers and the Fed normalizes rates to prevent a runaway growth and inflation. So you don't want prices to explode like they did in the 1970s. You want to be able to manage much of this. So this is what the Fed and what the forefathers designed the Constitution to do, in the fact that the Federal Reserve is supposed to be bipartisan or nonpartisan and not influenced by political parties in any way. And they do one of two things. They either decrease rates to spur growth or they increase rates to make sure that they normalize inflation and runaway growth. So previous recoveries have seen the Fed raise rates an average of 18 times during each recovery. That's an average, all right? So it's a nice stat to know. So think about that for a second, 18 times. However, more than 7 years into the current recovery, the Fed has only raised rates once so far. So although another may be coming before 2016 ends, and that's the rumor right now, is that and the fact that the market has priced in a 25 basis point raise coming up here in December, it's about at about 60% or so. Another, you know, that's far below average. One or even two rate hikes clearly doesn't equate to rate normalization in any way. So to put it another way, the Fed may have taken the economy off life support, but it hasn't released it from the hospital by any means. So now low rates are a good thing when borrowing to buy a car or a house or financing the expansion of a business, which is great. However, according to the data of the U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis, which is the BEA, Bureau of Economic Analysis, BEA, economy-wide, Americans receive two times more interest than we pay because rates don't discriminate. This means that low rates hurt the typical consumer twice as much as they help. So historically, lower rates have led to lower levels of savings, and when consumers should receive 10% interest on a savings account, which is what was going on in the 80s. It made more sense to save than spend. But as interest rates fell, so did the rate of the savings. And the Fed pushed rates to zero during the Great Recession, but instead of leading to higher rates of spending, this move actually led investors to save more, which was completely opposite of what the Fed wanted, but that's exactly what everybody wanted to do because they were scared. And that's how detached the Fed's been to much of America, is understanding that, look, even on this show, I'm telling people to save money. Put money away. Save it. You know, drive down your debt. Make sure your feet are underneath you as a family, that you have a good foundation and that you have minimal debt and that you save as much as you can and pay yourself into your 401k. Pay yourself into your IRAs, pay that long-term money to yourself. So the reason that the change in this behavior is really easy to explain. So investors looking to save for retirement or other purposes can't count on interest to push them towards their goals. So for example, if an investor wanted to generate $100,000 in income from a portfolio of two-year treasury bonds in 1980, they would only need $763,395 to meet that goal. Does that make sense? So $100,000 of income, if you just want to put it in treasury bonds and take your ball and back, go home, you could have you only needed $763,395. Now, by the year 2000, that number had grown nearly to $2 million. Given today's ultra-low rate level, an investor would need a staggering $14 million of two-year treasury notes to generate the same $100,000 in income. That's how interest rates affect your portfolio. That's how interest rates affect your savings rate and savings amounts. So that's what why monetary policy has been keeping us as a country from our potential. And I'm not saying raising rates to exorbitant levels here is, I'm not advocating that in any way, but I am advocating and have been advocating for quite some time for just a normalization on this. If 25 basis points is going to cripple our economy at this rate and this growth level, then we have some real problems. They should have been raising rates the last couple years and getting us back to some sort of normalcy. And unfortunately, that's just not the case. So that is basically one of the reasons that America is not reaching its potential. The show's Money Matters with Greg. I'm Greg Farrell, CEO and President of Farrell Wealth. It is WVLP 103.1 FM, and we're talking America, and we're talking why it's not reaching its potential overall here today. If you want to call on the show, it's 219-476-9000, or find us on Twitter at Farrell Wealth and reach out to us about any topics and whatnot. And if you'd like to advertise on the show, please contact us. We'd be happy to help out with that as well. This is a local radio station that is a community radio station. That's why I chose it, and the fact that it's a 501c3, it is a charity. So any donations to the charity are tax deductible, and that is it's just a great it's a great place with good people here, and I wouldn't be able to do this show without WVLP's help. So thanks to everyone involved at WVLP. It's a great place to be and only getting better as we were just Greg Kovach, the engineer, and I were just talking about just recently with Ron Bush, who does a show right before us on cyber attack risk. I highly recommend you catch Ron's show at any time. He was a guest on my show, and he was so good that they invited him to have his own show, which is fantastic, and I'm really excited for Ron. He's doing a great job out there. He's on it right before us, I believe, at 8 o'clock and 8 to 9 here at WVLP 103.1 FM. Another factor when we're talking here in America and not reaching its potential is the income-to-debt dynamics. Now, the U.S. has been – the potential in the U.S. has been income growth. And the U.S. has the fourth highest average income in the world. But the U.S. median income, which removes the impact of disproportionate gains among the very wealthy – ranks 19th. So, in fact, to the U.S. Census data, if you look according to the U.S. Census data that came out, the median income has only increased by $3,149 since 1989. So when you adjust that for inflation in 2015 dollars, with most of this increasing coming in 2015, the increase from 1989 to 2014 was even smaller, a total of $351 or $13 per year. So you want to know why Americans are feeling as if the economy is not reaching its potential? It's because in the past 14 years, I've only made I really have only made $13 more per year as a median. That stinks. That really, really hurts and can totally understand why people are so frustrated. So that equates to approximately $121 per year for a family that makes a median income. And this lack of income growth for a large segment of the economy is holding back economic growth. So that's why, in addition to the lack of the substantial income growth based on inflation rates, necessities are becoming more expensive, while luxuries are becoming cheaper. Isn't that interesting? So the Fed has yet to normalize any rates. 8 years in this economic recovery. Low interest rates have led investors to save more following the Great Recession, and they really are creating a savings glut, even though you're getting almost no return on your money. People are hoarding cash and hoarding it quickly. And then luxuries have become cheaper, while necessities have cost more. TVs are cheaper. Toys are cheaper. Cell phone service software is all cheaper. Household furnishings and goods and clothing is all cheaper. New cars is about the same, but your housing's gone up. Your food and beverage has gone up. Your health care has definitely gone up. Your child care has gone up. Your college tuition has gone up. And all textbooks are probably the highest in the last, really, price changes since 1996. Believe it or not, the most expensive thing that's gone up exponentially, and this amazes me. I don't know why, because you'd think it would go down, especially with technology, but textbooks have gone up over 200%. College tuition's gone up 200%. But TVs have gone down nearly 100%. Toys down 75-ish. Cell phone service down 50. So you start looking at the things that that really, really matter, and you realize that based on inflation, the lack of income growth for a large segment of the economy is holding back economic growth overall. All right, so those are the two reasons why America's not reaching its potential. Your monetary growth and your income dynamics are the two main things. Now, all right, let's be positive here. And how can we reach? Let's look at the solution, right? We always talk about having a plan here and working a plan. So my dad always said, have a plan, now work the plan. And his words live in my life and hopefully yours on this show every single day, because you need a plan. You have to have a plan if you're going to create wealth and create a business or do anything in regards to money. You have to have a plan to increase that amount of money. So what's our plan here to reach potential? Well, real GDP growth needs to increase in order for the U.S. economy to meet its potential. At 2.1% growth rate, we won't close the gap that we need to close very fast. But increasing the real GDP even slightly to 2.5%, so only 0.4%, it shows a significant improvement in the overall economy, and a larger increase to 3.5% would help close the gap even faster. So, of course, this growth has to come from somewhere, and overall, we believe that the potential areas of improvement include business spending and wage growth, which is better for all Americans and good for all Americans. But the growth in business spending has been really slow during the recovery, and companies have not been afraid to borrow given historically low interest rates. But spending in the recent years has been more focused on stock buybacks and expanding capacity. So if I'm a large corporation and I wanted to be able to borrow money at a very low rate to be able to buy my stock back, well, why wouldn't I do that? Of course I would do that. And that's why you're seeing some of these names of some huge stocks that are out there. They're announcing $3 billion, $5 billion, $10 billion dollar buybacks. And that is those companies wanting to reinvest in their stock share prices, owning their own company, and really saying, well, I mean, we can borrow this money at a very low rate. We're not going to get much for it, but why not just buy back our stock and literally pay back ourselves in the form of a dividend if you have one, or as far as growth in the stock, you can make money on it. So part of the reason this existing sort of capacity has been sort of sufficient overall is in this expanding that capacity, either do a stock buyback and versus really expanding. You'd rather buy your stock back versus expanding your overall capacity. And part of the reason that that existing capacity has been sort of sufficient is given the slow wage growth at home and the slow economic growth abroad. It's been very limited demand for U.S. exports. So our exports have gone down. There's really not a lot of demand out there, or as much as there used to be, out there for U.S. exports. So wage growth has basically been flat. So although it's been showing signs of life recently, obviously that helps growth by giving consumers the means to spend more and save more. But it also helps by improving consumer confidence, and people feel more confident about things. So that allows consumers to save less or take on additional debt. Now, debt, up to a certain point, can be very positive for an economy if it spurs the needed growth or is an investment in the future growth. But as we have learned time and time again, too much debt, driven in many cases by too much confidence, can then end up being an overall problem. So there's a delicate balance on the front of the Fed, which you kind of need to watch closely. So the fact that wage growth is also one of the best predictors of Fed rate hikes is another testament to its impact. And it is very, very important. Wage growth is very important to a number of different things. But when you see Fed funds rate has historically had a strong correlation with wage growth, meaning the stronger wage growth may lead to rate normalization, means they might actually raise rates. You might be that might just be the medicine the economy needs for the Fed to decide it's time to release in this now healthy patient from the around-the-clock care of the hospital, which has been going on for a number of years. So basically, we're not reaching our potential in this U.S. economy. There's two reasons why. Monetary policy, which is one, and income and debt dynamics. Following up after that, how can we reach a potential? We can increase the GDP. And then just after this break, I'm going to talk about how we invest in the potential resurgence of America and the possible investment opportunities that could arise based on the resurgence of a U.S. economy that is actually growing. With that said, this show's Money Matters are Greg. Greg Farrell, CEO and President of Farrell Wealth. And it's on 103.1 FM WVLP. Thanks for being with us today. And we will be right back after a quick sip of coffee and a quick song about money. Thanks. Be right back.
Shot a man while robbing his castle. Robbie Sue took the money.
right. Thank you, Steve Miller, and taking the money and run. We're going to add some new songs here, and Greg Kovach has been a lot of help in being able to add some money songs about this show. The show is Money Matters with Greg. I'm Greg Farrell, CEO and President of Farrell Wealth. And thanks for the quick break, Greg, to be able to get a sip of coffee and get back at this and finish out the last half hour of the show. We're talking money today, and we're talking the value and the potential of America and the economy today, and saying that the economy and our U.S. economy is not living up to its potential. And why is that? So that's our main topic today, and then we're going to get into a number of different things as far as like how income taxes work. I wanted to be able to teach a little and have some reasons, a couple different things about an estate strategy for millennials, and a number of different things out there that we like to be able to talk about to help you with your money, give you some opportunities to be able to save some money, put some money away, and follow along with some tips that we have here to make you keep some money and keep some money in your pocket rather than dishing it out all the time. So right now, what we were talking about before was America and its potential and how America is not reaching its potential and how it might actually reach its potential with a stronger GDP. And if you do get that stronger GDP and gross domestic product, you're going to see opportunities out there. There are going to be opportunities for improving GDP growth. So, you know, it's really important to look ahead to possible investment opportunities as to how you can make the most of this potential resurgence that is out there. Now, we really expect the stock market to continue to see this volatility into the year end. We're seeing a number of different volatile days. We had a good week last week, and then we had a really bad down today. But we've seen a lot of volatility, and we expect to see that stocks will see this mid to single digit return for the full year. We've noted that, and we mentioned that in the LPL Research Publication Outlook 2016 on this show, really talking about the belief that the conditions are in place for solid earnings rebound during the second half of 2016 due to these easing drags from the U.S. dollar and oil being not such a drag on the economy, and then coupled with minimal wage pressures overall. A slight increase in price-to-earnings ratios or PE ratios is certainly possible and has been shown as far as the market's gone. So stock ownership rates in the U.S. are currently low by historical standards, with only 52% of adults investing, according to a recent Gallup poll, compared with 65% in 2007. Now, this indicates that that additional money will be on the sidelines to help stocks move higher. And you're continuing wanting to favor growth sectors as you look out. So you're looking at technology, healthcare, and you're really watching for opportunities to add exposure to emerging markets and energy that are out there. We talked a lot about that in the show just last week about emerging markets and the opportunities that we're seeing and the value that we're seeing in emerging markets out there and growth that we're seeing as well as the energy sectors here in America and then also throughout the world. So year-end stock returns have been positive 70% of the time going back to 1980. And though it really hasn't worked well in recent years, a diversified portfolio that we talk about all the time on the show can really help investors over the long run achieve those returns and achieve that growth of wealth that we talk about here on the show. So diversification is measured by whether a diversified equity portfolio outperforms large cap equity holdings has only worked one in the past 5 years, but has also worked in 10 of the last 16. So if you go back further, it certainly does make sense. And we talk about diversified portfolio here on this show all the time and highly recommend that you diversify your portfolio into a number of different asset classes, everything from emerging markets to small caps, as well as real estate, precious metals, you name it. We would recommend that you diversify into a number of the different non-correlated assets to the market, but then also have exposure to the market in a correlated asset overall. So we're not allowed, based on compliance, to recommend one stock over another. But as far as a diversified portfolio, without a doubt, we can mention that it benefits investors historically. And as you seek to get a better risk-adjusted return and reach those long-term goals, it's by far the best way to be able to do it. So we continue to believe that the reasons to be optimistic about our economic future in this country are positive. So while the U.S. economy is not living up to its current potential, we believe in the prospect of stronger growth and continued global leadership will continue. And driven by the wage growth and the business spending that's out there, we can really help close the GDP gap quickly and helping the country again reach its economic potential without a doubt. So when you start hearing out there GDP, GDP, that is really important to be able to follow along, and I hope you will, because if we can just increase our GDP growth rate by just a little, even 0.4%, it is a major impact as large as this country is and as big as this economy is. So we're advocates here on this show for anything that has to do with growth and not stagnating growth. As an investment, looking for those investments and trying to figure out a way to be able to make sure that you can make as much money as possible and grow your wealth and grow your family's wealth. So the show's Money Matters with Greg. I'm Greg Farrell, CEO and President of Farrell Wealth, and then the show's on WVLP 103.1. We're on iTunes as well. Any of the topics we talk about are listed there. You can have us listen to us on the way to work or working out or wherever from iTunes. Just search Money Matters with Greg. And we just talk money on this show. So there's a lot of different things we talk about, but many of the things we talk about, all of the things we talk about, have some sort of correlation or relation to money and your money. So trying to help you save some money out here, financial education conversation. And we've got about 20 minutes here, and I want to kind of talk about something that's important to all of us, is how income taxes work. A lot of people are very vague or very they don't really know the specifics as far as the Internal Revenue Service. And I'm a big advocate for everyone being able to pay their fair share, but also keep as much as they possibly can based on the rules and based on the laws that are out there. So their Internal Revenue Service estimates that taxpayers and businesses spend 6.1 billion hours a year complying with tax filing requirements. And to put this in perspective, if all that work were done by a single company, it would need about 3 million full-time employees and be one of the largest industries in the world. That is sad, but that is true. So, you know, as complex as the details of taxes can be, and by the way, you can find this report on our website at farrellwealth.com. It is titled How Income Taxes Work, and it's a great little education on how income taxes work. And I'll try to cite as many as the sources as possible, but you can find this on farrellwealth.com under How Income Taxes Work. Also want to just real quick, I want to mention in the last report that I was going through, that is a report that is also on our website at farrellwealth.com, talking about how can the U.S. economy start living up to its potential. It's done by LPL Research, and that is a thought leadership piece from LPL Research. So I want to give a shout out to them. You can find them and follow them at LPL Research on Twitter. So income taxes. As complex as the details as income taxes can be, that you know that the income tax process is fairly straightforward. I mean, however, the majority of Americans would rather not understand the process, which explains why more than half hire a tax professional to assist in your annual filing. And that comes from the Internal Revenue Service off their website in 2015. So as much as businesses spend and the hours that they spend, typically you hire somebody to do it, is basically the finding. So this tax process starts with income, and generally most income received is taxable. A taxpayer's gross income includes income from work, investments, interest, pensions, as well as any other sources that you might have. And so this income from all these sources is added together to arrive at a taxpayer's gross income. Now, what's not considered income? Well, child support payments, gifts, inheritance, workers' compensation benefits, welfare benefits, or cash rebates from a dealer or manufacturer would be some of those. And granted, we're not an accountant and do not play one on TV. We have some fantastic accountants that we certainly work with. And one of those being Lashiak Accountancy Group that's local here in Valpo. Give a shout out to them. And they do a fantastic job. They've been on our show before and did a great job. Joe Lashiak, L-A-C-I-A-K. You can find them at lashiak.com. And they do a fantastic job as well. But the thing that I want to be able to mention as far as the tax code, so I want to be explaining all this, but also making sure that you hear where I'm getting it all from. So I mentioned child support payments, gifts, inheritance, workers' compensation benefits, welfare benefits, or cash rebates from the dealer or manufacturer. Now, what is considered income? Well, the tax code allows for, as an individual, to gift up to $14,000 per person in 2016 without triggering any gift or estate taxes. And an individual can give away up to $5.45 million without owing any federal tax. Now, couples can leave up to the $10.9 million exemption, which was done and established back in 2013, without owing any federal tax. And they can also keep in mind that some states may have their own estate tax regulations without a doubt. Some are higher, some are lower. But you are able to gift and keep in your estate, give away up to $5.45 million, and then as a spouse, you get double that. That would be $10.9 million. So together. Now, from gross income, which we're talking about first, all that stuff added together, adjustments are then subtracted. And these adjustments may include alimony, retirement plan contributions, half of self-employment, and moving expenses, and among other items that are deductible. And those are adjustable against your gross income. So when you get those adjustments, you ultimately get a result, which is your adjusted gross income. From adjusted gross income, these deductions are subtracted. With deductions, taxpayers have two choices. Now, you can do the standard deduction or the itemized deduction, but whichever is greater. The standard deduction amount varies based on filing status, which is known and can be seen, I'll just list that in a minute. But how do you file? Do you file head of household? Do you file single filers? Do you file married filing separately? Or do you file married filing jointly? And it really just matters as to how much of a standard deduction you're going to get and would obviously file under one of those. If you're married filing jointly, you would get a standard deduction amount of $12,600. If you're married filing separately, that's $6,300, which obviously is, if you double it, is the married filing jointly number. If you're a single filer, it's $6,300, which makes sense because it's exactly the same thing as married filing separately. And if you're head of household, it's $9,300. So itemized deductions can include state and local taxes, charitable contributions, the interest on a home mortgage, certain unreimbursed job expenses, or even the cost of having your taxes prepared, among other things, if you're eligible. So once these deductions have been subtracted, the personal exemption is then subtracted. So for the 2016 tax year, the personal exemption amount is $4,050, regardless of your filing status. The ultimate result after all of this, the gross income, then you have your adjustments, you get your adjusted gross income, then you have your deductions, then you have your personal exemption, the result is a taxable income. And that taxable income leads to your gross tax liability. So when people say you're going to pay your fair share, that's exactly what it is your gross tax liability. Now, is a quick fact here, no pencil and paper overall. The IRS reports that about one-third of taxpayers use tax preparation software, and this was as of the IRS source in 2015. So you get your gross tax liability, and you think it's over, right? We're done? That's not true. So you have to think again. Any tax credits are then subtracted from that gross tax liability, and taxpayers may receive credits on a variety of items, including energy saving improvements and a number of other things that are, you know, can be listed. But the result is your taxpayer's net tax. And that ultimately is, you know, understanding that this tax process, how it works is one thing. But, you know, doing the work is quite another. So remember that, you know, obviously the material is not intended here for tax or legal advice. And you definitely want to consult a tax professional with any specific information regarding your individual situation. But this is just an overall gloss over as far as teaching on how income taxes work. So your gross income, comes from a number of different incomes, types of income, including child support payments, gifts, inheritance, workers' compensation benefits. Those are not considered income. So, but anything outside of that, work, investments, interest, pensions, all those other sources are gross income. Then you have your adjustments, and those are subtracted. That gives you your adjustable gross income. Then you have your deductions, which are subtracted again, and those are all based on how you filing jointly, married filing separately, single filers or head of household. And then you have your deductions, which is subtracted with your personal exemption, and that becomes your taxable income, and this gives you your gross tax liability. And then after that, you take out any tax credits, and you ultimately get your net tax and what you owe. So those are paid on April 15th or throughout the year. If you're self-employed and you have an estimated income, you have those four times a year, and then ultimately what you owe on April 15th. This year, the filing date was April 17th because it was over the weekend. And these are all things to consider here towards the year end. It's October. Before we know it, it's going to be the end of the year. So you want to be able to make sure you're doing a tax analysis, whether with your professional accountant or your tax professional or whomever you use as far as your team goes, making sure you're considering all of those things that are taxable and hopefully limiting your tax liability towards the end of the year. There's a number of different ways to be able to have losses offset gains, and you want to be considering these things coming into the year end. Okay, so how income taxes work is that's my little snippet on that. And in the last 10 minutes here, I wanted to talk to the millennials out there and just sort of mention a couple things because I was watching a show, my son, Survivor. I'm sure everybody's very familiar with it. And right now they're doing a great show between Gen Xers, which is what I am, and the millennials, which is the younger just behind us here as far as the millennial group. So there's two groups, the millennials versus Gen X. And it's just fascinating to be able to see how the two two units or the two tribes are interacting and how they sort of interact as a Gen X group and how they interact as a millennial group and how they're succeeding and failing both. They've both been to tribal council in the last couple episodes, and they've both had a number of people voted off their tribes. And it's just interesting to see. So I wanted to be able to talk to the millennials a little bit. They sort of don't necessarily get as much attention as they deserve in the wealth side of things, although they should. And it is a brand new generation, wealth generation, and you can just tell from all the advertising that's going on towards millennials and also just the conversations towards millennials that it's a fantastic generation. And sometimes they don't necessarily get the attention they deserve when it comes to financial management and estate management. And I just thought I'd mention something in the last 10 minutes here about some of the estate strategies that are not just for the elderly. And many of the millennials think that, you know what, I'll never be that old or I'll never get to be that age. But you know what, you're young and you have little in savings and likely no one yet relying on you financially overall, maybe or maybe not. But you still need to be thinking about your estate management and estate strategies, and just so you know, they're not for the elderly. So I've got four reasons why millennials need an estate strategy. This can actually be found on our website as well at farrellwealth.com. You go to the Resource Center and you can see under estate planning. And this is where I'm pulling it from. But it's from a number of different sources that are very, very important. And I wanted to be able to bring this up to you guys overall. So for the millennials out there, and this is really for anyone, it doesn't necessarily mean, I mean, it's not just generational. There are four estate strategies you really should be using. But I wanted to be able to make sure I included the millennials and mentioned to them because you know, just because you're in your 20s or even 30s doesn't mean you don't need an estate strategy. So first and foremost, the first strategy you need for the four reasons why millennials need an estate strategy is you need a will. You may ask why a will is important, and if there's not much, there's not much to pass on, I can totally understand why you would ask that question. But a will is not just about transferring assets. It's used to accomplish many other things, such as who should manage your social media accounts once you're gone, or inherit items you've accumulated, like collectibles or even your car. There are some things you have collected, and some of those things might be very, very important to you, and some of those things might be have instructions as to how they get passed on to the next generation. You might have a favorite nephew or a favorite niece that you like a lot that wants to be able, you want to make sure that they get that one token that you got from maybe your grandfather or from your father or any of your parents or grandparents. And you want to be able to make sure that that nephew or niece gets that, and it's not written down on a napkin. So you need a will, and there are a number of different places you can get them. Obviously, any lawyer that you know would be happy to do it. You might know some people in law school that might be able to do a will for you that would be on the cheap, or I highly recommend and always mention as well, I think I should actually work for them, is LegalZoom.com. So if you go to LegalZoom.com, you can get a will and a will package, and for a very reasonable fee of a little over $100, and it walks you through the process electronically, and you can get your will printed, and yes, it is acceptable in all states, 50 states, no matter where you live, and yes, it is legitimate and can be then saved and scanned to some sort of cloud mechanism that you ultimately give your executors the chance to be able to know where that will is and how that might be read. Overall, just so everybody knows out there, if you do live in a state in the United States of America, which many of you do, which most of you do, we do have a couple of people listening in from overseas, but for the most part, everybody is United States residents and living in a state. You do have a will mandated by that state. So if you want to change that in any way, it's a document that costs a little over $100 called a will, and you want to be able to make sure that you get that done. And I would highly recommend you do it before the end of the year. You can feel real grown up about the fact you did it, and it's kind of a New Year's resolution that gets finished by December 31st. So set a goal, make a plan, work the plan, get a will, and make sure that there are some instructions in there. Even if it's glossed over and it's simple, it's still very important that you have something down. Next, second tip is a reason why millennials need an estate strategy is you don't want to be a burden to others for burial expenses. Funerals can be expensive, and if you want cremation, it's still not cheap. And if you don't have any savings to kind of meet those costs, those get shifted to other people. So if you want to be reliable and on your own, like many of you do, might want to come together with an estate strategy to be able to make sure that the burial costs are taken care of, and that nobody has to come up with that money, and they can range everywhere from a few thousands of dollars to tens of thousands of dollars, depending on your wishes. Also, consider having the third reason why millennials need an estate strategy is you really need to consider a medical directive. This is important. This is an important document, and it costs about $25 to $50 to be able to do electronically. Again, I mentioned LegalZoom. They have an offering there too. Any lawyer will do it for you. But this important document states your wishes at the end of life care. So basically, if something happens to me and I'm in the hospital, what are my wishes? You know, in the case of an unfortunate accident, the medical director provides those instructions about the level of care you want. I mean, do you want DNR, you do not resuscitate, or you do everything for me as much as possible before do not resuscitate? Do you want to live on machines? This is very important because what you tell your parents or what you tell your girlfriend or boyfriend doesn't count. You have to have a medical directive. It's called a medical power of attorney. Then also, lastly, just before the end of the hour here, as we try to reach and get this done, is you really want to create the fourth thing as reasons why millennials need an estate strategy is to create a durable power of attorney for healthcare in the event that you are unable to make any of these medical decisions yourself. This gives the individual your choice that legal power to act as a healthcare proxy for you. This also gives medical power of attorney. A medical power of attorney is very important to be able to have, not only for the medical directive, but also it helps you, you know, who pays the rent while you're, or the mortgage, or the car bill, or the college loan. Who pays those things while you're incapacitated and in, you know, living on a machine until you get better in the meantime? So you really need to be able to make sure that you're doing that ahead of time. And you're having multiple financial goals. Of many, you know, young adults often require more resources than your present earnings can meet. So planning steps ahead of time can accomplish can all be accomplished at a small cost. Okay, so those are the four things. You need a will. You don't want to be a burden for other people. You want to have your burial expenses or your funeral expenses paid for. Consider a medical directive. Overall, without a doubt, and then also durable power of attorney with healthcare, as well as basically what they call a medical power of attorney, which is what do you do and who pays the bills if you're incapacitated. Now, the information from that is not intended for tax or legal advice and not to be used for the purpose of avoiding any tax penalties or anything else, but please consult legal and tax professionals for specific information regarding your individual situation. You can find that on our website at feralwealth.com and / resource center, and that's under the estate planning tab, and sort of take that report and study it diligently. Those are my four things, four reasons why millennials need an estate strategy, and I hope that helps you out. We talked about income taxes and how they work. We talked about the potential of America and how we were living below our potential right now, and hopefully a solution as to what we can do to go above that potential. And that's our show for this week. The show is Money Matters with Greg. I'm Greg Farrell, CEO and President of Farrell Wealth. The show's on WVLP 103.1 FM. Thanks for being with us today. Find us on iTunes. Find us on Twitter. Call into the show, 219-476-9000 anytime if you want to advertise or have a topic for the show you want to talk about. Thanks for being with us today, and we'll talk to you next week.
Greg Farrell is the president, CEO of Farrell Wealth, and is a registered representative with and securities offered through LPL Financial. Member FINRA, SIPC insurance products offered through LPL Financial or its licensed affiliates. The opinions of Greg and his guests are merely opinions. All individuals should get their proper advice investing and managing their personal finances. Money. Get back.